People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply. People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, welcome back to the Sports Media Watch podcast. I'm John Lewis, joined as always by Drew Lerner. Please subscribe at the SMW podcast feed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and more. Well, let's go ahead and dig right into the story of the weekend from a ratings perspective. Yeah, the NFL, of course, dominated everybody. 27 million viewers for the national window on Fox. Great number there. But sometimes 2 million is more notable than 27 million. And in this case, that's because it was 2 million viewers, or nearly that much, for Caitlin Clark's first WNBA playoff game on Sunday in the direct line of the National Football League. A 3 o'clock start, that means you're going up against the end of the 1 o'clock window and the start of the 4:25 window. This is the witching hour window, probably the worst time slot you could possibly have on an NFL Sunday. And yet, Caitlin Clark, in a game where her team lost by 24 points, nears the 2 million mark on ESPN, 1.8 million. What more can you say about the Caitlin Clark effect? I tried to put some context in there, this article that I wrote on Monday, kind of going deep into really what she's done for the WNBA this season, her rookie year. But 1.8 million viewers for any WNBA game in the best of circumstances, an all-time thriller, you know, game five of the finals, unopposed by any other sporting event, 1.8 million would be a massive number. To get it for a first round game one where a team gets smoked and you're up against the National Football League, I mean, it just says everything you need to know about the incredible ability. It's not really an ability, but the incredible following. It says so much about the incredible following that Caitlin Clark has. The fact that her fans, her viewers, they will follow her anywhere and they will tune out of things they would normally watch to see her play. Drew, I'll bring you in.
Yeah, and it's not even just fans that are tuning out of the NFL, but she brings additional sports fans to the table, right? I'm almost certain that there's a lot of fans of Caitlin Clark and of the Indiana Fever and of the WNBA more generally that aren't NFL fans. But even from my personal experience as a loyal dual screener on NFL Sundays, I was tempted to put one of the screens on Caitlin Clark's game as well until I saw the score was quite a blowout. I ended up watching two football games, but even the fact that someone who is almost always going to be watching two separate NFL games on a Sunday afternoon, knew that the Caitlin Clark game was on ABC, was curious enough to even check the score. To me, that means, wow, this has crossed over. And 1.8 million viewers, is a great number directly against that time slot in the NFL. And I'm very eager to see, John, what this Wednesday night number is for game two, where there is no football competition to be had.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that could hurt that number is the perception that Indiana does not have a shot, which I think is a fair perception. Certainly, they got blown out more than any other team in their game one. Even Atlanta, a dreadful team with like a, I think maybe 13 games under 500. Atlanta was closer to New York than Indiana was to Connecticut. That might hurt, but I don't really think that it will, because the fact is, it's a cult of personality kind of deal. It's like Lynn's sanity, only it didn't last for 2 weeks. It lasted for, you know, well, we're 2 years and counting, dating back to when she really became popular at Iowa. So, yeah, that game on Wednesday night, game two, especially if it's close. I mean, I don't expect Indiana to win, but, you know, certainly you would think that they'd be a little bit closer, make a few more shots. If it's close, obviously over 2 million, because even though it's on cable, it's prime time, no competition from anything of note. I mean, that could be really big. And then the question becomes, well, what happens? It's kind of like with the USA men's soccer, where you see the incredible numbers in the early rounds and you're like, wow, if these guys ever made the final, imagine what the numbers would look like. Well, can you imagine what might happen if Caitlin Clark and the Fever, you know, certainly this year, not very likely, but if they were able to get to the finals, or, you know, I mean, we could be talking about numbers that are reminiscent of the Stanley Cup final.
I mean, no doubt. That is a bit of probably a pipe dream for WNBA executives and fans. But, you know, I think that would probably rival even more than a Stanley Cup final. I mean, just look at what Caitlin Clark has done in college. If word spreads that she is in a WNBA final and maybe she's going against you know, Aja Wilson, or, you know, I'm not really sure how the bracket shakes out, but some of the other high profile stars in the WNBA, then that could draw a number comparable to maybe even, you know, a World Series number. It's not out of the question.
No, you're right. It's not out of the question. We obviously, I would never have thought that women's college basketball could get 19 million viewers, right? I would never have thought that. Even heading into this year, I would not have thought that. So anything is possible. It seems kind of crazy, the idea that a WNBA Finals game could get to 9 million, which is World Series level. But, you know, anything's possible. The only thing that's not possible is the Fever getting to the finals this year, because they're a rookie, young team. They're obviously getting shown up by veteran squads. If they were to somehow beat Connecticut, I can't see them getting past Minnesota, you know, and the bracket shakes out where New York and Vegas, the two best teams, are on the same side. They'll play in the semifinals, which is an opening for the other side of the bracket. But I think Connecticut and Minnesota are just too good. And in the case of Connecticut, which was in the finals 2 years ago, too experienced. They got some Hall of Famers on that team.
Yeah. And, you know, we were talking, you know, months ago when the WNBA season was just getting underway, that they would be fortunate to have the Fever in the playoffs to begin with, mm-hmm. especially after their, you know, really sluggish start to the season. It looked very unlikely that they would even make it this far. So the fact that the league is getting at least two games of the Indiana Fever in the playoffs, you know, it's going to set that bar for the future, right? When we talk about WNBA playoff viewership, broadly, you know, these two games from Caitlin Clark are going to raise that bar. And when we look down the line to next year and the year after that, when the Fever are presumably, you know, a better team and can compete with, you know, these veteran squads like New York and Connecticut, you know, that's going to be the number that they have to clear, right? And hopefully, just by way of the team getting better, them playing in more playoff games, volume wise, then that will continue to raise the viewership level of the league.
Yeah, I mean, look, the reality of the matter is too. I mean, you say volume, best of three is not cutting it. They're going to have to go to best of five at some point. It should not be that. And look, best of three is an improvement over the single elimination that the league had until a couple years ago. In the old format, Indiana would have had a single elimination home game against Phoenix. And then had they won that, a single elimination game either at home or on the road against Atlanta or Seattle. And then if you win that, you get to the next round. So they could have gotten one game. But certainly best of three is not acceptable anymore. And best of five, maybe best of seven for the finals at some point.
Yeah. Has there been any talk about the expansion franchises and how that's going to impact the playoff format, John?
I don't believe so. And it's interesting because, you know, the WNBA, one of the most important things the league did to really begin this process of making it to where it is now, that's a process that began before Caitlin Clark. That's something that should be noted. You know, I kind of talked about this in my article. Caitlin Clark's elevation of the WNBA could not have happened unless the WNBA had already gotten to a point where CBS wanted in, where ION wanted in. And the changes that the league made, chief among them in terms of becoming a more attractive property, was getting rid of the conference affiliation in the playoffs. That conference affiliation resulted in 3 out of 4 years that Atlanta made the finals and they got swept all three times. Dreadful finals. It resulted in a lot of sweeps. I think there were 4 sweeps in 5 years, including Phoenix over Chicago. They eliminate the conference affiliation, immediately have 2 epic 5-game series between Minnesota and Los Angeles. So that was the first and most important thing for them to do. You get these expansion teams in, are you going to feel pressure to go back to conference affiliation? Because I don't think that they should. Maybe that'll make it easier for Indiana to get around, right? Because the West is always stronger for whatever reason in basketball. I do think if you go back to conference affiliation, that would be a mistake. But I also think that if you have an unconference format and 20 teams, that becomes unwieldy as well. You have to have a way to organize those teams. You know, I don't know. I don't know how they're going to do it. But certainly right now, there's 12 teams, 8 make the playoffs. That results in Atlanta getting in when they have a horrible record. So one positive is, okay, yeah, you have 8 teams, but you've got 15 total. That means you're much less likely to have a really bad team making it in.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, by 2026, they'll be up to 15. I'm not sure if there's further plans to expand to 16. 15 sounds like a bit of a, you know, an odd number. I think 16 sounds like a good size. But for now, there's going to be 15 in 2 years. To me, it seems like you can keep it how it is. I don't think that's enough teams to really warrant, you know, conference affiliations, East, West. That doesn't seem like necessary. And if you're the WNBA, you want the best product. And that means, you know, you want the best teams in the playoffs. So to me, it makes all the sense in the world to kind of stay the course and kind of forego those affiliations for now.
Yeah. Yeah. You mentioned 16. The WNBA did have 16 teams at one point. They expanded too much too soon, really early on. And at one point did have 16 teams. So we'll see what happens. Expansion too much too soon could very well happen again. We don't know. I'm not sold on Portland. I wouldn't have gone back to Portland. You know, when I could go back to Houston, you know, it's not like Portland is some kind of massive market. I know they've got the thorns there, but the WNBA failed in Portland already, and it failed after 3 years.
And John, one more quick one, just on the league generally. Do you think, as you know, just as a fan of the league, that there's the depth on these rosters to expand 3 teams in 2 years? I mean, if you think about it, you know, the WNBA has probably got to be the toughest league talent wise to get into out of all, you know, North American sports leagues, right? You have only 12 professional teams. The rosters are what, 12 players, 10 or 12 players. And think of all the Division I college teams on the women's side, over 300. You're really getting the cream of the crop in the league. To me, just like the numbers would make sense that you could have a few more teams and keep the level of talent up. Do you agree with that premise?
Yeah, I do, because the fact is there's a lot of players who don't make it. You know, I went to college with someone who got drafted into the WNBA, and the only pictures of the person in the WNBA are from the draft day, you know, photo shoot, because never played. I think it's, first of all, you know, that's fewer people who need to go play overseas, which we know with Brittany Griner was a disaster. So, yeah, I mean, I think the WNBA, it's so hard to get in that they have a surplus of talent. The talent's not going to be the problem. You know, for me, the lesson of the early 2000s, when the WNBA wasn't as big as it is now, but it kind of was, certainly viewership was higher. I mean, granted, 20 years ago, but they expanded too much too soon, and in markets that didn't make a ton of sense. I would say the markets the WNBA needs to go back to are Sacramento, probably not going to happen now that they got Golden State, Sacramento, Houston, and Detroit. Now, Detroit's a tough one because the Pistons have been so bad for so long. I don't even know if they remember what basketball is over there. But, you know, the shock. Oh, you know, the WNBA put out this big announcement the other day. Oh, my God, most attended game ever in Washington last week. Wow. It wasn't. It was the most attended regular season game. But Detroit, twice in the finals, produced larger crowds than that. Now, that's another thing, too, just really briefly. One of the things that I'm sure irritates a lot of people in the WNBA. A complete lack of any interest, even at kind of a league level, in the league's past. And a lack of appreciation for the fact that this is not the first time that people have cared about the WNBA. The WNBA was in the wilderness for a long, long time. But you go back to, you know, late 90s, early, mid 2000s, people have cared about this league before. It's gotten big attendance before. It's gotten big viewership before. I mean, relative to certainly where it is now. It's gotten bigger audiences on TV and bigger audiences to watch in person. What Caitlin is doing is amazing and the greatest thing that ever happened to this league. But, you know, she's not set a viewership record yet for the WNBA. She's not set an attendance record yet for the WNBA. It's not like there was nothing and then God said, let there be Caitlin, right? There was something there. It wasn't big. It didn't last forever, but there were times when the WNBA resonated with people in the way that it does today. Maybe just in one market because the team was winning. Maybe just in the 90s because there was novelty. But it has happened before. There's precedent.
You're definitely right, John. And I'm sure if the resurgence continues at its current trend, you know, there will be books written about the mismanagement of this league and why the league was in the doldrums for, you know, two decades almost without Caitlin Clark coming to save it.
People get really upset when you say save the WNBA, which I think is, you know, needlessly, you know, whatever, but people get
a bit melodramatic.
Yeah, it's melodramatic to be upset about that. I mean, you know, but people, especially when you're talking about women's sports, they resent the idea that a savior is needed. And the WNBA didn't need saving because the WNBA wasn't going to die out. The only time the WNBA was close to death was during the recession. Once it survived the recession, I mean, you know, I think the WNBA wasn't in imminent need of anything. You know, now has Caitlin Clark taken the WNBA to places it could never have gotten to? Yeah, I believe so. Already she has. But, I mean, I don't think the league needed to be saved. I will say 1.84 million viewers for that game, Caitlin Clark and the Fever against Connecticut, and the most watched WNBA playoff game since Game 2 in 2000 when Houston clinched the title, Game 2 of the 2000 Finals on NBC. So just incredible stuff. And the Caitlin Clark effect remains really hard to believe.
Yeah, a very strong number for Caitlin Clark's debut in the WNBA playoffs. John, what did the other numbers look like? Were they equally as strong considering the teams?
No. And, you know, the Caitlin Clark effect has trickled down to other teams, but certainly not last weekend. None of the other three playoff games had even 500,000 viewers. So, I mean, you're talking about three games, none are at 500K. Then the other game is at 1.8 million. I mean, this is such a singular thing. It's really hard to believe. It's unfortunate that Angel Reese got hurt and Chicago did not make it. No one is trying to argue that Angel Reese is as big a draw as Caitlin Clark, but he's a bigger draw than most of the rest of the league. And certainly if you had her in there, Maybe that Chicago New York game would have popped a little bit. Nothing to 1.8 million, but you know, at least 600,000-700,000 or something. Seattle Vegas was a surprisingly mediocre number to me because it had the Sunday night baseball lead in. And I know Sunday night baseball does not do great numbers opposite the NFL, obviously, but you know, that is still a significant product to be airing directly after. And the game had the lead in Phillies Mets 1.3 million. So that's not a bad lead in at all. I'm surprised that post Sunday night slot, you've got people tuning into SportsCenter to see the highlights of the NFL, and nope, nothing going there.
I know you don't always like to give predictions, John, but let's assume that Kalen Clark goes out in the first round, either on Wednesday night or in a game three. How do you think the finals will look for the WNBA? Do you think any of those games eclipse the 1 million viewer mark?
That is a really good question. There were times during the regular season where the numbers for games not involving Caitlin were really good. You know, over a million for Aces Sky in August on CBS, that's a great number. But I don't think you'll see seven figures for a finals game. I don't. One, it's not even going to be a finals rematch. New York and Vegas are on the same side of the bracket. So you'll get a nice big pop in the semifinals. But when you get to the finals, what, New York, Minnesota? Minnesota without Maya Moore, you know, Minnesota was never really that big of a draw, period. I mean, they were the biggest draw in the WNBA, I guess. But, you know, that was not an era of great viewership for the league. And it was only when they played LA in those two finals, you know, that the viewership was really strong. You know, and look, Minnesota is not the highest profile squad. I think their biggest familiar name is Daryl Reeve, probably. You know, and Connecticut is a small market, not really small, but, you know, San Antonio-sized market that plays hard-nosed defense. Well, that's never been a great recipe for TV. And one of those two teams is guaranteed to be in the finals unless Indiana or Phoenix pull off a pretty stark comeback. Now, if Phoenix gets in there with Taurasi and Griner, you know, Phoenix, New York, that's a great matchup. Phoenix, Vegas is a great matchup. But I mean, I don't think they're going to be able to. They played Minnesota pretty tough in game one, but I can't see them winning. So the finals matchup is not going to be the most attractive. And I think for that reason, you know, you might see viewership decline from last year's finals. I don't think you can rule that out.
At Kroger Pharmacy, Care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
At Kroger Pharmacy, Care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, it is so fascinating. Like you said, the singular force of Kalen Clark. But it'll be very interesting to see those numbers with or without Clark, depending on what the matchup looks like. But John, I think it's time to move on to some NFL ratings. To me, the headline, once again, is the Kansas City Chiefs. I think I heard you on Deitch's podcast last week say that the Chiefs are now America's team, just purely based off the viewership. Sunday Night Football this past weekend, Chiefs-Falcons averaged 24.8 million viewers across NBC and Peacock. That, of course, includes the Adobe Analytics. The Nielsen-only figure is about 22.8 million. Either way, very strong number for Sunday Night Football. John, what do you think of the Chiefs ratings dominance so far this year?
Yeah, well, 22.5 million is the final number for that Chiefs Falcons game. Look, they are obviously a tremendous draw. I mean, you know, maybe I'm speaking too soon, putting the Cowboys in second, because over 27 million for the Cowboys against Baltimore. And that ended up being a close game after being a blowout for a lot of it. But, you know, this is something we've not seen in the NFL for a long time. A two-time defending champ with a realistic shot at three-peating. We haven't seen that since the Patriots. And 3-0 so far, every single game won at the buzzer, basically, in the final minutes, with help from officiating and some calls, you know. And that, you know, angering people, frustrating people, making people upset. You know, how do you think the Yankees got so popular, right? All that Jeffrey Mayer stuff. That's the next thing to happen in the NFL. Some Chiefs fan is going to somehow interfere with play and they'll get away with it, right? Or there'll be a Tim Donaghy or something, right? Because that's the way it always works for these teams with the Yankees, the Lakers. You know, something always happens that's different and unusual that results in them somehow winning. And it's part of the drama. And Kansas City has that. So to me, I think I would call them America's team. There's nothing more American than being hated, right? I mean, the fact is, when you are a team that has some antagonism to you, a team that people want to see defeated, that's what makes America's team. That's why LeBron has never moved the needle more than his first 2 years in Miami, because, you know, it's the hateability. There are Caitlin Clarks and Tiger Woods out there where people watch out of love, but in team sports, certainly, it's usually hate. Obviously, the Jordan Bulls are an exception to that, but it's usually hate.
Yeah, and it's funny, John, you know, sometimes, you know, on Twitter, you kind of see these maps that go viral that say, oh, you know, the most hated NFL franchise in each state. And I saw one of those last week. And the thing that struck me, and I have no idea if this is actually an accurate representation of fans in each of these states, but the thing that struck me about this map was the Cowboys were only the most hated team in one state, and that was Virginia, the state I happen to reside in. Obviously, because you have some a large contingent of Commanders fans here. But by far and away, the most hated team was the Kansas City Chiefs. And I couldn't agree with your point more. I think people watch because they love the star power, right? They love to see Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift. The stars are out at the Chiefs games, and it makes people happy when they struggle. They have a high propensity to play in these close games, these drama-filled games. And another point I'd like to make is the NFL, with their new officiating initiatives, and specifically their ability to kind of go back to New York and take a look at things in ways that they would not have done, you know, 2 years ago, stuff that would normally require a coach's challenge or would have just been a blown call in the past. Now being changed, it kind of opens Pandora's box to conspiracy theorists. And I think with the way they're kind of playing fast and loose with how they can go about changing calls on the field, really adds to the drama and adds to the intrigue of people and how they view a game like Sunday night's game against the Falcons, where the officials did play a leading role. I'm not necessarily saying that there's any sort of conspiracy here. Actually, I'm saying quite the opposite. I don't think that's happening, but it certainly opens the door to those narratives. And, you know, it just adds to the intrigue.
Yeah, of course, there's no conspiracy. You know, I mean, realistically, the NFL does not need to do that. The NFL can do well if the Jaguars are winning, which, of course, they're not. But, you know, certainly there are teams that have all the privileges, right? It says a lot about the NFL that team is Kansas City and not New York, right? But usually it'll be your New Yorks or your LAs, you know, Chicago. I mean, people don't like to bring it up, but I think Michael got a few calls in the 1990s as well. Certainly if you're Utah, you can look at the three-pointer that was disallowed and the three-pointer that was allowed in that game six back in 1998. So, you know, I mean, hey, that's the way sports works. It's not rigged. It doesn't have to be rigged in order for there to be certain privileges and certain advantages that come with being a bigger market team. That's not the same as they say at the beginning of the game, here's who's going to win. But, you know, certain teams are going to get all the calls. And it's human nature, right? If it was completely objective, you know, if you had robots making the calls, we wouldn't like it because every single LeBron James drive would be a travel, you know, like there'd be every single penalty called. I mean, this is a TV show. And as long as the result is still something that is determined by the players, a few calls here or there that are not necessarily great are things that I think most fans kind of accept. And beyond that, they add to the lore a little bit. They do. I mean, it's a terrible thing to say, but you know, Jeremy Mayer or Jeffrey Mayer, I don't even know what the kid's name was, that adds to the lore. I mean, who was going to remember the 1996 ALCS if not for that, right? Don Denkinger, who was going to remember Game 6 of the 1985 World Series 40 years later? Or the perfect game by the Detroit pitcher, who was going to remember that? You know, you remember these things. They're part of the history of the game. And, hey, would I love if Sacramento had beaten the Lakers in 2002? Yeah, but you know, that Kings-Nets finals would be a heck of a lot less remembered than that Game 6 between the Lakers and Kings was.
No doubt, John. And just one more thing before we move on to some other ratings. When we're comparing the Chiefs and the Cowboys, you know, all I'm thinking about is Dak Prescott and CeeDee Lamb do not compare in terms of national relevance to Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce. You know, there's one team who is crossing over into the cultural zeitgeist, you could say, and that's the Kansas City Chiefs. The Cowboys will always rate, but I think it is more than fair to say right now that the Chiefs are, in fact, America's team. So I will continue to bang that drum for you, John, because I think you're spot on. Thursday Night Football, another blowout for Amazon this week. Jets and Patriots. Aaron Rodgers seemed to return to form, a bit of a coming out party last week, but only 13.37 million viewers. That was down 4% from last year, which was Giants 49ers. But up significantly from 2 years ago during Amazon's debut season. So any takeaways from the Thursday Night Football number?
Not really. I do want to say, you know, I had said in my article about the TNF number that there's a lot of, you know, debate about, is Amazon really drawing more younger viewers? Or is it just that older viewers cannot find Prime? And so younger viewers make up a bigger percentage. Well, I will note Amazon in week two, because we don't have the week three full numbers yet, obviously. Amazon in week two was second only to the national window on CBS in terms of viewership in 18 to 49 and 18 to 34. So if you're Amazon, you're going to say, hey, yeah, we are actually drawing more younger viewers. It's not just that older people can't find Prime. We are getting a bigger, younger audience than these other windows. And I think that's a fair point. Something that ultimately, you know, would be easy to overlook But I do think Amazon, at this point, you could make an argument, they are drawing younger viewers in excess.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. Obviously, younger viewers more used to streaming, probably more likely to have Amazon Prime versus a pay TV subscription. And Amazon just makes it very accessible too. I don't think these numbers actually are counted in the Nielsen ratings, but every Amazon Thursday night football game is also streamed on Twitch, which isn't really talked about too much, but you can get it for free on Twitch. It is not the normal broadcast. It is the Statcast, which I talked briefly about last week. But for those that don't have an Amazon Prime subscription, it's a really great alternative. I'm not sure too many people are familiar with it or if those numbers are counted. I doubt they're actually counted in the Nielsen numbers. But Amazon is really making a very concerted effort to attract a younger audience and reach viewers where they are. And so if I'm Amazon, that is certainly something I'm going to bring up over and over again when it comes to their viewership, because, you know, at the end of the day, a viewer that is a 29-year-old male is much more valuable than the 70-year-old, you know, the 70-year-old dude that's watching on Fox or CBS, right?
Well, you know, you got to be careful because you don't want to say more valuable, right? I mean, we all know how television works. We all know how TV works, and the younger viewers are certainly rarer. And so, for that reason, young male viewers are a prize that older viewers are not, because, you know, the advertisers want to reach young male viewers and they can't figure out how to, because it's difficult to monetize a stream of some guy talking over a video game, right? So if you can find a way to get younger male viewers to tune in to the NFL, you can reach them, and people will pay more money to reach that audience. That's why the NBA is getting $76 billion in its next deal, despite the fact that the viewership has not been particularly strong. Not the only reason why, but one of them. And so, yes, you're absolutely right. You know, cultivating that younger audience. This is why Amazon is valuable. This is why the NBA is willing to move. And one of the reasons why they're willing to cut TNT to the curb, because are you kidding me? How many more younger people are familiar with Prime than are familiar with turning on the channel that otherwise is running reruns of Bones, right? So if you can be adjacent to whatever young people are watching on Twitch, you'd rather that than being adjacent to decades old reruns of, you know, procedurals. I think it makes sense.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, John, do you have any other news and notes from football viewership over the weekend, college or pro?
Well, you know, obviously USC Michigan did great for CBS, and, you know, CBS gave up the SEC. They don't get the best game every week in the Big Ten, but occasionally they will, and they got a great number for that USC Michigan game. I noticed they took their studio team to that game, which they did not always do for the SEC. I will say Colorado winning at the buzzer against Baylor, not as big a number as you'd think. Under 4 million viewers on Fox. I think the Dion era has kind of settled into, you're not going to get those incredible record audiences anymore, but you'll still get a nice solid number. 3 million viewers for Colorado Baylor, that's not even on TV a couple of years ago. Keep that in mind. Obviously, the Dion effect is still real. We'll see what the Monday night numbers were for the NFL split. That'll be interesting as well, ESPN and ABC.
Yeah. One more note I want to make is the Fox Friday night game. Big success this week. 4.21 million viewers for the overtime game, Illinois-Nebraska. Up huge from their first Friday night game, Arizona-Kansas State, which came in around 2.5 million viewers. So I don't know, John, you know, Fox has a history now that, you know, they made Big Noon into something that was a viewership draw. Perhaps Friday night on Fox also becomes a viewership draw. Clearly, they're trying to put some strong-ish games, I would say, in this window. Not necessarily the strongest, but definitely matchups that matter, at least matter to a certain subsection of the country, that, you know, in the Midwest, Big Ten football, they're also playing a lot of the former Pac-12 teams in this window, John. So definitely a concerted effort to make this into a viewership event. And, you know, let's be honest, ESPN really hasn't taken advantage of their Friday night football window. Most of those games are dogs, you know, lower profile ACC games and Big 12 games. Really not viewership catnip, you could say. So Fox is trying to capitalize and very strong number for week two. So it'll be interesting to see if that continues.
You're absolutely right. And the fact is that, you know, I think for ESPN, because they've got the NBA on Friday nights, or at least they have in the or at least they have historically had the NBA on Friday nights, they weren't looking really for a big college football package. But Fox really being very opportunistic. Mike Mulvihill has a history of this. Obviously, we talked about the creation of Big Noon. But if there's a single window where college football games regularly air and the games aren't great, well, putting great games there will be an improvement, right? And so, you know, you have the SEC on CBS, they own 3:30, and ABC own prime time. But that still left Saturday afternoons in the early afternoon, it left Friday nights. Technically, it leaves Thursday nights, although the NFL being there means you won't see anything. I mean, there's always going to be room. And, you know, Fox is programming 11 o'clock, like, every week on Saturday nights. That late night game, you know, the standard has been, well, we can't have a late night game on at 11. Why not? There's stuff on after midnight on over-the-air television every single night. And if you're going to put Kimmel and Colbert, why not college football? The NBA used to own that time slot on CBS. It wasn't a good thing, but that used to be their time slot after the local news at 11:30. There's no reason not to program every single period of time that you can possibly program with the best games you can, with the biggest exposure that you can.
Yeah, and it wasn't long ago where ESPN college football owned Thursday nights. That used to be a marquee window, top broadcast team, good game. And this was obviously before the NFL had, you know, moved over to Fox and then later to Amazon. And it was a bit easier to compete while those games were on NFL Network. But these weeknight high-profile college football games are not new, right? And it makes a ton of sense, you know, to avoid the NFL competition now and put a similar profile game like that on a Friday night as opposed to Thursday, like ESPN did in the past. Honestly, surprised it took this long for someone to figure this out. I know for Fox, the circumstances with WWE meant that, you know, they couldn't do it, but perhaps maybe a bit surprised that ESPN did not try to capitalize on this sooner.
Yeah, but like I said, I mean, they had the NBA, and it just so happens that Fox has created this Friday night window right as ESPN is losing the Friday night NBA. They'll obviously still have Wednesday nights and occasional Friday games, but it's interesting. I wonder if they were anticipating that ESPN would beef up their Friday night college football. Maybe that this was a move to crowd them out. But it's certainly a lot of potential. And you're right about the quality of the games. You don't need Ohio State. You know, Illinois has Chicago. If Illinois is good, you know, Nebraska has all of its history. That's not a great Saturday matchup, but it's a good enough game for a standalone window. And they got lucky because both teams were ranked. Usually, Illinois is not going to be any good. Illinois just happens to be good this year. In a normal year, that might not have been such an attractive matchup. So we'll see what the rest of the schedule looks like. I know they got one like after a World Series game coming up at late night. It's a lot of creativity. I give Fox a lot of credit for being creative. And so far, it's worked out. You know, some of these games are going to be ugly, like Oregon-Purdue. I don't think you want to put Purdue again in a standalone window. Northwestern-Maryland. I mean, you know, some of these are not going to be attractive games, but they don't need to all be hits. You just put a few decent ones in there. You'll get lucky occasionally with what, you know, maybe some that are bigger than normal. And even if they're not good, because it's a standalone window, you're going to get 3 million viewers.
Exactly. So we'll keep an eye on that Fox Friday night package for the rest of the year. John, any other viewership news and notes before we head out of here?
No, I don't think so. IndyCar season was down slightly, ended with a pretty low number for the final race on NBC. CW had its most watched sporting event since December for the start of the NASCAR Xfinity Series, and that was down from the same race last year, just to be clear. But if you're a CW, that could be a real hit. If CW is getting anything close to what those Xfinity Series races were getting on USA, then they're in position where they're going to be getting solid, respectable sports audiences on a regular basis. And right now, they're getting that occasionally from the ACC, but certainly they're not getting it from LIV Golf.
Yeah, that's about a 10 times the viewership of what LIV Golf is pulling for their playoff events. So, that LIV Golf property, nothing to call home about for the CW. But that's exactly the type of property that will do well on the CW. A loyal fan base that will find where you are. NASCAR definitely checks that box. They're about to start broadcasting WWE Next, which is, I feel like, kind of hits on the same profile of diehards that will find you wherever you are. So I think those are the types of properties that the CW should be focusing on.
They should be kicking themselves for not getting the WNBA.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an interesting thing because, you got to be smart and you got to really go after. Everybody thinks the only thing with value is the NFL. Maybe get the bull riding. How did Merritt Street get the bull riding? What is Merritt Street? What is that? Right? The Dr. Phil thing that Ken Solomon got fired from Tennis Channel for being a part of. What is that? How are ION and CW not getting the PBR? Bowling, when that comes up.
Yeah, this is the first time hearing about this.
Look, there's a lot of niche properties out there that do well enough every week that if you can get by with a couple hundred thousand viewers, then hey, and they're all doing better than LIV. LIV is an interesting one. That, at this point, given everything we've seen from the WNBA, from, ACC football on CW, the LIV Golf numbers are noticeably poor. All these other events, even the airing on ION and CW, are still doing normal-looking numbers. Golf, there was no PGA Tour golf anywhere over the weekend. So how does LIV get the numbers that it's getting for its championship event?
Your guess is as good as mine, John. And it's like you have high-profile name-brand players on that tour and nobody cares. I will be publishing an article on this very topic for you within the week. So certainly a lot to explore there, and probably one of the more notable failures of any sports media property of the last couple of years.
Yeah, agreed. And like I said, it was one thing when LIV debuted and there was no precedent for anything else being on CW. You have no context for it. You're like, okay, well, maybe that's just what being on the CW is like. But no, we know that's not true because we've seen time and time again other properties do dramatically better.
All right, John, I think that about does it for today. A lot of good viewership talk. Why don't we close out the show?
All right. Well, today is actually Drew's final podcast for SMW. Drew is moving on. And I will say, I started this podcast 2.5 years ago with TJ Reeves, and TJ cold called me out of the blue and, pitched me on doing a podcast, which I'd never really had the interest in doing. And then when TJ moved on, it was kind of, well, how am I going to continue this? So Drew coming on was a huge help. It's the only reason this podcast has continued the past couple of years. And I got to say, I appreciate so much having him on this pod and all of his insights and certainly all the hard work behind the scenes to help put it together. He's done the lion's share of the editing on this pod really appreciate everything that he's brought to it the last couple of years.
Thank you, John. It's been, quite a pleasure, honestly, to do this podcast with you. This is episode 82 of this version of the podcast. It's honestly gone by so quickly. And, it's been something I look forward to every week, getting to chat with you about, sports media, sports viewership. Your insights are regularly incredible. Much more incredible than mine. I've learned a lot from you just during these conversations. And you know, this is not the last you will see of me in the sports media space. But unfortunately, this will be the last you will see of me on this podcast, at least for the time being. My personal hope is John continues this in some form or fashion, even if it looks a little different, sounds a little different. But yeah, this has been awesome. I think it's been a really valuable resource, being able to hear your insights, John, weekly. It has been certainly a really, like I said, valuable resource for sports media fans and those interested in the ratings and viewership like we are.
Hey, thank you for the kind words, and looking forward to seeing more of you as you move on to your next endeavors. As far as the SMW podcast goes, stay tuned. Certainly, Sports Media Watch continues in its normal fashion, and anything that you don't get from the podcast, you'll get on the website. So thanks for listening, like I said, stay tuned.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply. People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.